What's good, everyone? My name is Jacob Moses, community builder at Strongtowns, and welcome to It's the Little Things, a Strongtowns podcast where in each episode, we focus on a different action that you, the concerned citizen, the elected official, the city planner, can take to make your town stronger. This episode's action, loving where you live. The average American moves 11 times in their lifetime. And sure, sometimes it's for a job or for family, but most of the time, it's because we fear we're missing out on something better. Or as our guest Melody Warnick calls it, FOMO, fear of missing out. So we keep moving, hoping that some magical voice in our mind eventually says, ah, now I love where I live. Sadly, it doesn't always happen that way. But there's good news. With a new perspective and a series of small, purposeful actions, you can love where you live, no matter where you live. In this episode, we'll chat with Melody Warnick, author of the book This Is Where You Belong, about why Americans move so much, how to make small yet powerful steps to feel attached to your community, and most important, how to love where you live. Enjoy. Hi, Melody. How are you today?
I'm great, Jacob. Thanks for having me.
Yes, thank you so much for coming on to the show. How's life in Blacksburg?
It's lovely. We are maybe awaiting Florence right now. We're not too sure about the path of the hurricane. But other than that, we love it here. Fall is a great time in Blacksburg because college football and everyone gets really excited. It's fantastic.
Did the Hokies get their win week one?
Yes. So they have won twice in a row now. And I say that as if I'm a huge football fan, and I'm not, but there is something in the air in when something that exciting is going on in your town, and people love it, and there's kind of an energy to downtown, which I like.
It's awesome. And you can take part in the periphery, too, which is super fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Melody, I am just overjoyed that we get to have you on the podcast. Your book, This Is Where You Belong, just totally rocked my world and completely changed my thinking about why and how we come about loving where we live. And I'm so excited for you to share your message with our listeners, especially in relation to this podcast. In each episode, we talk about a different action that listeners can take to make their town stronger. And I can't think of a more accessible, achievable, and rewarding action than loving where you live. So Melody, I would love to start just by talking about why did you choose to write a book about this topic of loving where you live?
This is my story. I wrote This Is Where You Belong, and I tell people that it is part memoir, part nonfiction book, part research, and part anecdote, because I needed it, because I really needed the advice in this book. I grew up in Southern California and never moved a single time my entire growing up years until I went away to college. And then I got married at the end of college. And since then, my husband and I have moved, you know, I guess now we're up to 7 times, 5 states. We've done Maryland, Utah, Iowa, Texas, and now Virginia. And it felt for a long time like we were just hypermobile. Richard Florida says that there are 3 types of people in the world. There are people who are mobile, who move around a lot, people who are stuck, who, you know, may be in their place for a long time, but they don't really like it. And then people who are rooted, people who are in their town because they're choosing to be there and they love it. And for a long time, we just felt mobile. We were moving for school and jobs and kind of ending up in places where we would think to ourselves, oh, this is going to be it. This is going to be the place where everything comes together for us, where we just love it here. And then we'd end up moving again after a couple of years. And I began to really think about what has to happen, logistically speaking, what is going on when people make that transition from I'm new in this town, or I don't really like it here, to this is my place. You know, these are my people. I love this community. We moved to Blacksburg, Virginia in 2012 because my husband got a job here. He works at Virginia Tech University. And we came here not knowing anyone, never having lived in Virginia. We're not from this part of the country. And almost immediately, I was like, I don't like it. This is not a good fit for me. It felt very Southern, and I'm from California, and we were moving from Austin, Texas, which is one of those places where people go, Austin, it's so cool. And people would be like, why did you come here? Why did you leave Austin? And I was like, I'm not really sure. Did we make a terrible mistake? But
can we get queso here?
Right, exactly. Show me the tacos. And there were no tacos. That was the downside. So we kind of felt, or at least I felt for a little while, like, what have we done? And now we're in this place where, you know, my husband has this new job and my kids have moved around a lot. And I recognized that I needed to learn how to stay put and be happy in my town and feel rooted here. And I wasn't initially quite sure how to do that or what had to happen. So I began to look at research about this and was surprised to find that there is research about this. And I came across this term, place attachment, which is one of the terms, my favorite one, for when researchers are describing that emotional bond that people develop with their place, that, you know, there's no place like home feeling. And there were studies that kind of connected certain behaviors to that feeling, and then also connected that feeling to lots of really positive outcomes like better health and higher levels of well-being, increased longevity. I wrote the book to chronicle my forays into building place attachment. I started this project. This is one of those sort of experiential memoirs where I did what I called love where you live experiments, little behavioral changes that were designed to make me fall in love with my town and be happier there. I wrote the book as an effort to provide a bit of a roadmap for other people in my shoes, people who are moving around a lot, but also people who may not love where they live right now. And even people who do love where they live and just want to deepen that investment and maybe learn a little bit more about why it matters, because it does matter.
And as people are on this journey to find where they want to live and how to love it, you share the stat in your book that the average American moves 11 times in their lifetime. 4, 5, 6 makes sense. You know, we pursue different opportunities for work, different family events happen. But how do we get this point of 11 times? How did we get here?
Right. Like, what's wrong with us? the way we live now. I think it's a few things. I think in the past that upwardly mobile has become equated with physically mobile. If you want to progress in your career path, most people nowadays seem to do that by moving towns, by moving from city to city as they chase higher level employment. But it's actually interesting to think about, we are a nation of mobile people. You know, we started out as immigrants and adventurers from other countries, and we have histories of mass migrations across the United States, and that may even be a global thing. So I think as humans, we do tend to have a certain restlessness, which is sort of, you know, fear of missing out now. There's something better out there. I think a lot of us feel like there is a better life waiting for us in the next town. If only I could finally get my lake house, or if I could move near the beach, or if I could end up in that city that I really love, then everything will be good. My life will be better. This place will somehow fix me. And what I've discovered is places don't always heal us the way we want them to, but the healing and the fixing and the goodness comes from choosing to love where you are. And I say that as someone who I acknowledge that not every town is a great fit for every person. There definitely is something to finding the best fit you can. But some of us are moving without a lot of control over where we end up. I talk to a lot of military families and military spouses who do PCSs, and they just are sent somewhere. They didn't choose it. They didn't choose to move then, but they have to go. What I've learned about place attachment, which tells me that we can feel happier and more rooted in a place, even if it's not really the place we want it to be. It's something we can choose for ourselves. We can choose to love the town we're in now.
So whenever we eventually do settle, we can't fall in love with it immediately, right? It's not some kind of magic switch that comes on. I think about after I graduated from university, I moved up to Boulder, Colorado from Denton. And my thought beforehand was, there's going to be mountains. All will be well. The moment I step into Boulder, I'll climb a mountain. I'll fall in love immediately. And that wasn't the case. So Melody, why can't we fall in love with these places immediately?
So Catherine Laughlin is a researcher who spearheaded a study with the Knight Foundation and Gallup called Soul of the Community. She writes a lot about this topic, and she found that it takes about 5 years for place attachment to peak when you've moved to a new town. I think some people do have that feeling of moving to a place and, you know, feeling that instant connection. But a lot of place attachment is built over time. It's built on relationships. It comes, you know, not just from looking around and being like, hey, this is a beautiful town and I think I'll like it here, but it comes from slowly, incrementally investing over time, getting to know people, deepening those relationships, volunteering, getting to know things locally. And that's just a process that takes a while. And I think that's one mistake that we make when we move, is we want it to happen really fast. You may have had an experience in the past where it did happen fast, and it convinces you that because it's not happening fast now, there's something wrong. You know, I chose the wrong place and I need to unchoose it. I need to just move on again. What I've seen is that when we, you know, slow down and just take the time to really get to know our place, get to know other people in our place and get involved, that, you know, those feelings come. They can take a while, uncomfortably long. But I also think, you know, the moving process itself is so chaotic and overwhelming. Almost like your brain can't really handle emotional connection. You have to sort of let things shake out for a little while before you're even really capable of those feelings of place attachment. But it's nice to know that that's okay. They will come, just maybe over time, longer than you want sometimes.
So Melody, how do we get started? You mentioned in the intro that this is where you belong is your story. You made all these moves in your young adult life. And then you talk a lot about in the book, the move from Austin to Blacksburg. Rethinking and revisiting those early months in Blacksburg, what were some of the initial steps you took that really helped you incrementally develop that sense of place that you think could help our listeners as well?
One of the approaches that I took as I started doing these Love Where You Live experiments and kind of thinking about how to consciously build my sense of rootedness and my sense of love for where I live was that I needed to get to know this place. So a really easy, simple thing that I did pretty quickly after moving to Blacksburg was to start walking. And for me, it was because this is just how I exercise, because I don't run unless people chase me. And so I just walk. And I started walking around my neighborhood, just, you know, I'd leave from my house and I'd walk up the street, and I found that walking was a great way to absorb and observe your surroundings at a really slow human pace. I think when we're in a car, we see things through windshield perspective, which means everything kind of goes by fast and you're just trying to get from point A to point B most of the time. Now, a walk is about exploring and ownership. And I think biking fits in there too, that it's a little bit slower, it's a little bit more immersive. You're in the place that you're in. You know, I talked to one guy for the book who owned a bike shop in Fargo, and I remember him telling me that, you know, if he drives a car through a place, it's sort of meaningless to him. But when he bikes through the place becomes meaningful. You know, he said, then I own it. And I think that sense of ownership is a lot of what we want when we're talking about place attachment, that feeling of, you know, I care about this place, I know it, and I belong here. So for me, walking was a really easy one. I think the hard one, but also the necessary one, is getting to know people where you live. A lot of place attachment is feeling like I like these people and I care about them. There's a place attachment quiz in the book that's just kind of statements of place attachment, and people can kind of go through the list and see, you know, would I answer yes to this or no? And one of the place attachment quiz items is, the people in this town are my kind of people. You know, that feeling that, hey, like, these are, if not friends, then potential friends. And I didn't really feel that when I moved to Blacksburg. I felt a little bit like a foreigner, like I was an alien who had landed on some forgotten planet. But learning to get past my preconceived notions about what people in this town were like, and then slowly developing friendships, was really key for me. And I think it's key basically for everyone in developing place attachment and that sense of rootedness where you live. It's one of the most difficult questions for people. How do I make friends in my town? How do I build those relationships? And luckily, there's a lot of different answers. You know, for me, it was going to church. I always meet a lot of people in my church congregation that become friends, and that's great. But for other people, it might be joining the neighborhood association, or, you know, simply putting yourself in a place where you might meet people. One woman whose story I really like, her name's Kristen Shell. She's from Austin. She was throwing a party and she bought a picnic table and she decided to put it in her front yard instead of the backyard, which is where everyone would normally put that. And she began to make a conscious effort to sit at the table, you know, to have meals out front, or to just, you know, hang out there and like do her paperwork or whatever. And it became this thing where people would stop and, you know, they wanted to kind of see what she was up to and they'd start talking to her. And this has become a nexus of social connection for her whole neighborhood, simply because she made herself available for it.
And Melody, I appreciate you bringing the topic of ownership up. I think about my own attempts here in Denton, Texas, to love where I live. I get that sense of ownership whenever I start to contribute. So whether that's joining the neighborhood association and helping plant the flower beds or helping pick up the trash. When someone moves to a new place, it can be difficult to bridge the gap between living and contributing, because it can be scary to show up, you know, like, I just moved here, I don't know anyone. It can be scary to show up to all these different kinds of events and contribute. So Melody, how can we overcome those obstacles and understand that, hey, just once I show up, all will be well? But how do we knock out that first step of showing up?
I think this is one of the hard things. I have a whole chapter in the book about volunteering and how integral that is to that sense of engagement and investment. You know, like, I'm committed to this project here and I'm passionate about it. And one of the studies that came up in my research showed that when people move to a new town, they're really likely to have a hard time reintegrating into the volunteer things that they used to do. So, like, say you were, you know, you volunteered at the animal shelter in your old town. You might move to a new town and want to do that again, but kind of struggle to know how to do it, or it's just different. I think there's a lot to be said for setting yourself a goal and kind of forcing yourself to do it. we're always our own obstacles, right? Even now, knowing as much as I know about the importance of just showing up and investing in your community, I feel like I'm always fighting my own tendencies toward being a big introvert and honestly, like being really lazy. There's a big development planned for a neighborhood not far from where I live, and they were having a big meeting. It was on my calendar. And then when it, you know, that night came, it's just like, this is really hard. It's way easier to just lie on the couch and watch Netflix and, you know, and not do that thing. I think sometimes we have to acknowledge that it's okay sometimes to just be introvert, you know, be an introvert or be slow in your approach to investing. You don't have to show up for everything every time, but maybe you can show up for one thing a month or one thing a week. You know, maybe you don't have to be a volunteer or in charge of something. You can just show up to an event to participate in it. Or maybe your way of investing and engaging is reading a local newspaper and, you know, writing a letter to a town council member or something like that. There are lots of different ways to feel invested and engaged that don't all require joining a club or leading a project or something. So it's okay if that's not you, if you're not a joiner or a leader. You can still contribute and find meaning and feel more rooted by finding other ways to feel, you know, engaged and feel like you care about the future of your town.
Yeah. And just resting in the fact that like dope stuff is happening around you, even if you aren't actively contributing to it. So you mentioned in the start that you're not a runner. So you're not going to join the running club, a walking club, perhaps. That sounds more up your alley. I imagine you still feel that sense of community on a city level that, hey, these people are still gathering and running. I'm never going to do that. But how cool that I have neighbors who are willing to meet and partake in this like-minded interest.
Right, exactly. Like, I am so glad that that's happening. And that's really how towns work, that there's a lot of things out there and you can't do all of it. But, you know, you find the thing that feels like a good fit for you. And if that thing that is a good fit isn't there, you know, maybe you create it even better. But there is some level of behavior change or love where you live experiment that will have a positive effect in your life. And it doesn't have to be everything all at once. It can just be one thing at a time.
Well, Melody, let's go back to the soul of the community study. I can't think of a better incentive for someone to start loving where they live than the fact that by having an emotional attachment to where they live, the city actually does better economically. Could you elaborate on that for us? It's crazy and super encouraging.
Yeah. So this was a 3-year study done by the Knight Foundation and Gallup, where they polled people in, I think it was 26 different cities across the United States, you know, really small towns like Milledgeville, Georgia, and really large cities like Miami and Denver. And they just asked people questions about how they felt about where they lived and what mattered to them. And thinking that the things that will come out of this are people really want, you know, a great local government and a strong local police force, things like that. The results surprised everyone, which is that the strongest drivers or the elements that were most closely correlated with place attachment in all these different towns were kind of what you might call soft factors. They were social offerings, so feeling like your town had things to do, people to do them with. Aesthetics, feeling like your town was beautiful or appealing in some way. And openness, or feeling like your town was welcoming to you and other people. As they measured people's sort of self-reported sense of how their town did on those elements, they found that the higher they rated their town in those elements, the more place attached they were. And then this other factor, which is the more place attachment existed in a town, the better that town did economically. Local GDP rose in tandem with place attachment. So the most place-attached communities also were doing the best economically. And it's sort of like this chicken and an egg thing, right? You know, maybe people are just drawn to towns that are doing well economically already. They're a little easier to love. But actually, you know, what the researchers posited was that people who are place attached are more likely to invest economically in their town. And that can come in a lot of different forms, you know, more likely to patronize local businesses, more likely to, you know, buy real estate, buy a house, more likely to start their own business. And I talked to an economic developer recently who studies, you know, what makes people start businesses? How do they choose where to start? And the number one factor is people choose to start businesses where they want to live. So, you know, if you're happy in your town, you're going to start a business right here. You're probably not, you know, moving to Silicon Valley right now. You're just going to start it right now. So if people are happy where they live, they're more likely to put money into their place and towns become more successful. And I think you see that just in terms of, you know, how we support our town. One of the big behavior changes that I tried to make as part of one of my Love Where You Live experiments when I was writing the book was to shop more locally. And that was really hard for me because I'm like the classic Amazon Target shopper, you know, had never even really thought about it. Just, this is easy and convenient and I don't have to talk to another human. And like, great. This sounds amazing. And then as I started researching place, I realized what a terrible toll this had taken on towns that, you know, over the years, and, you know, not just Amazon, but long before this, with the advent of malls, main streets had been dying and small local businesses suffered as big national chains moved in. And I realized that my shopping habits were a part of that. And that if I wanted to see my town succeed and I wanted more of that money to circulate locally, I had to change the way I shopped. I'll admit that I'm not perfect at it. You know, I still buy stuff from Amazon and Target, but I try to buy more things from local businesses, you know, when that's an option, to shop at the local hardware store instead of always running to Lowe's or Home Depot. You know, one of the place attachment benefits of that, you know, it makes your community better, but it also helps you feel like that sense of ownership and investment that we've been talking about, because you kind of know that you have a part, you have a role to play here. You are voting for the kind of community you want to see every time you spend your money. And there's also this really great human element too. One of the things that I did as a Love Where You Live experiment was join a cash mob where we met downtown. It was something that the Downtown Business Association organized. And we all committed to spend $20 at a store. And then they told us which store it was. And it was this skateboarding shop downtown called Green's Board Shop. And I'm like, I'm, you know, a 39-year-old woman. Like, what am I buying at the skateboarding shop? I'd never been inside, but I was there with this cash mob and I went in and all of a sudden it was like, okay, you know, like this is a cool store. You know, I found a shirt to buy. And when I went, took it up to the front to pay for it, the guy who owned the shop was like, thank you for doing this. Thank you for joining the cash mob and shopping here. Like, and all of a sudden I made this connection that, oh, there are people who own these stores. This is their livelihood. You know, this is not just something put here to make my downtown look nice. Like, these are people who need to support themselves. And that's part of being a community too, is helping other people live their lives that they want to live.
Yes. And I appreciate you using the examples of the hardware store and the skateboard store as examples of shopping local, because we all love that term, live local. You know, it's become kind of a buzzword, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, Melody. In my opinion, it's kind of being over associated with local food. For example, before I joined Strongtowns, I owned and operated a corner store in downtown Denton, where I live. A buddy of mine, Dan Kruka, was a professor at UNT and brought his economics class in so they can get a real local case study of how economics works in retail. And as the students were shopping my store, which was mostly national brand products, we had flashes of local. You'd have your Jif peanut butter and your Reynolds aluminum foil. They didn't necessarily think that they were supporting local because they weren't buying local product. So I think it's so important for us to evolve and redefine what shopping local and living local means. It doesn't mean just local honey and local greens. Those are huge aspects. Again, Melody mentioned, take part in what you love. If it's local food, that's how you contribute. But don't just reserve it to food. Like, get your chinos dry cleaned at your local dry cleaner. Get your screws and nails from your local hardware store. Like, I kind of feel like we need to change it from live local to live on a neighborhood level. Like, what's happening around you? Yeah, you're not buying local honey, but you're buying national brand honey from a guy who lives next to you. And that's still supporting local.
None of us are really living local until we can actually buy all the stuff we need locally. And that's, you know, one thing that people complain about is, you know, yeah, there's lots of really cute boutiques downtown, but I can't buy a pair of underwear. When there are stores that do sell stuff like that, you know, and they're locally owned, it's our duty to shop there and to support them. I think the thing that makes it really hard is, you know, you can look at local honey and local greens and know that there's, you know, there's a qualitative difference between the honey from China or whatever and the honey that came here locally. And we're willing to spend a little more for that. When you look at the container of Jif or Reynolds Wrap, and you know, I can just go to Walmart and buy this for a buck cheaper, hard for people to make that decision because sometimes shopping local means spending a little bit more money. You know, I will admit, like, that was and kind of remains hard for me to just say, this is an investment I'm making. And I was just having this conversation with someone the other day that it's sort of like people choosing to buy organic. You know, you kind of acknowledge that you're probably going to spend a little bit more money. There's like this premium added to the top because you're making an investment. You value this. It's healthier for you and you want that and you're willing to pay for it. I think buying local is the same thing. You're making an investment in your community and its health. And, you know, what if we were all willing to just pay a dollar more to support local businesses and see them thrive? It makes such a huge difference to, you know, not just the people who own the businesses, but to the overall health and vibrancy of the town. When, you know, when you have a local corner store that people are willing to love and support, it becomes this catalyst for connections in your community and just a sense of pride in the neighborhood. And that's really valuable, more than just, you know, maybe the buck or two that it costs a little bit more.
So Melody, someone listens to this podcast, they're inspired. They start to wave to their neighbor. They start to walk around the neighborhood as opposed to hopping in the Corolla. What can people expect from these series of incremental purposeful actions to love where they live? Sure, there's like maybe surface level feelings of I have more friends or I know where like the best taco joint is. I'm sorry to bring that up. I know you're in Blacksburg and not Austin anymore. But I imagine there's a much like deeper philosophical emotion that arises beyond more friends and knowing where to get the good hamburger.
Yeah. For me, I think one of the key things here is belonging. We as humans are built for belonging. We want to feel part of a community. And that's something that a lot of us have lost, where we were really busy and it's easy to just sort of keep your head down and live your life and buy your stuff on Amazon and never talk to your neighbors. And that works for a while, but you feel like something's missing. And I think, you know, that sense of community, of being part of something that's bigger than yourself, is what gives people meaning and purpose in their lives. So, you know, maybe that's a stretch to say that saying hi to your neighbors will give you meaning and purpose in your life. But I think it's sort of a snowball effect that you start small with those little actions, you know, taking the walk, taking muffins to your neighbor, picking up the piece of trash you see in the street simply because it's your street. And then that kind of expands over time into a sense of your power to make change in your community and your desire to see good things happen in your town. You know, one of the place attachment items on that quiz I was talking about is, I care about the future success of this town. You know, everyone cares about their own future success, but when you can say that you care about the future success of your entire community, you want your neighbors to succeed, you want the people across town to succeed, that's a higher level of meaning and love for what's going on around you and the people around you. We can't underestimate how impactful that is. How much of an impact you can have on your town, but also how much of an impact those kinds of behaviors and that kind of thinking can have on your own personal happiness and fulfillment.
Oh, it's amazing. And it's so accessible too. Just step outside and figure out how you can fill the void or contribute to the things that you find align with your interests. And it's particularly refreshing for my age group too, Melody. I'm a recent graduate, 26 years old. And it's so common for my age, folk like me, to think, I can't love where I live until I move to one of these sexy cities. So I have to live in New York. I have to live in San Francisco. I have to live in LA.
Or Austin.
Melody, for those folk who feel like they have to live in one of these sexy cities to love where they live, what would you say to them?
Don't fall into that trap. I actually see trends moving away from that, where people are realizing that they can have a better life in some of the, you know, so-called second tier cities. But even, you know, no matter where you are, you're in your hometown, or you're in a small town, or you're in Akron, Ohio, or wherever you happen to be, the power of place attachment is that it doesn't matter where you live. It works anywhere you are. In that Soul of the Community study that I mentioned, you know, they were looking at place attachment levels, and they found that in the first year of the study, Grand Forks, North Dakota came out on top for place attachment. Like, it beat out
so cool.
Much bigger cities like Miami and Charlotte. And other people who don't live in North Dakota might be like, why would anyone go to North Dakota? But it doesn't matter. The Grand Forks people know they have a good thing going. They love it there. And they're happy and they're content. And I think you can find that no matter what town you're in. And honestly, no matter how long you plan to be there. You know, sometimes when people know that this is just sort of a stopover for me, I just graduated from college and I'm, you know, figuring out my next step. I don't think I'm going to be here for long. And so we kind of shut down to these ideas of building community where we are. But I've actually seen people do it really successfully, even knowing that I'm only going to be here 6 months or a year or a couple of years. This is something that you can choose for yourself no matter where you are and no matter how long you're going to be there. And I actually think in some of these slightly less sexy towns, you can have a bigger impact. You live in a big city that's really hip and there's not much to do. I love an underdog. And so, you know, some towns and cities are underdogs. They need people to champion them. I find that those places tend to be more welcoming. They want the newcomers. They're open to ideas because they kind of know they need a little bit of change. And that can be really a way easier way to get involved because you know your town needs it and welcomes it.
Oh, it gives me goosebumps, Melody. It's such a beautiful message. So To wrap up, and this is the question that we end every podcast episode with, Melody, how does loving where you live help us build a strong town? I know we've covered a lot of it, but what's a couple sentences?
Loving where you live is how we create the communities that we want to see. It's good for the town's economic growth. It's good for the community's vibrancy, but it's also good for you. It helps you see that you are a part of this town and your presence here can have an impact, that you can change your feelings about your community. And in turn, that changes the community itself. I kind of feel that towns respond to our love in some ways, and not to anthropomorphize too much, but when we love where we live, it's like our towns kind of feel it, and they grow and develop and do better because of that love. So it's nice to think that this is a really simple series of actions that we can take. And in the book, I lay out at the end of every chapter, I have lists of ideas, some of which are kind of big, but some of which are really basic and take 5 minutes. So there's a starting point for everyone. You know, this is something that isn't, you don't have to have a lot of money. You don't have to be elected to be a town official. You don't even have to own a home. You can just do this wherever you are right now.
And if you have an idea, chances are one or two people are going to get behind you. It's just a matter of going out there and starting it and seeing what kind of tribe you can build. It's amazing, Melody. So where can people find you online, Melody, if they want to follow more of your work, stay engaged with the kind of content you're creating? Where can people find you?
Come to my website, which is my name, melodywarnick.com. I have a newsletter that I send out about once a month that you can sign up for there, where I include lots of great links, including links to Strong Towns articles that I love that help you think about this idea of place attachment. And I also do a lot of speaking all over the country, and happy to come to your town.
Well, Melody, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me and sharing your wisdom. And we will chat soon.
Thanks so much, Jacob. It was a pleasure.
Bye, Melody. Talk soon.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening, everyone. If you're enjoying the content, please subscribe to It's the Little Things on iTunes. And we will chat next week. See ya.